Welcome, everyone. There is so much to get to today. We've got a lot of guests on the show. We're going to speak with Congressman Andy Biggs just after 9 o'clock about the January 6th thing, about what happened at our state capitol. We're going to ask Congressman Biggs about the revelation that he asked for a pardon, what that means overall to people. We're going to do all of that this morning. We're going to speak with the interim county attorney, Rachel Mitchell. We're going to speak with county attorney candidate on the Democrat side about abortion laws and Julie Gunigal. So it's a packed show. We start this morning where we never want to start, but it seems like we are doing so often, and that's violence against police officers. Yavapai County Sheriff Sergeant Richard Lopez was shot and killed yesterday in a line of duty incident, suspect barricading himself in a house. They arrested the suspect. I want you to hear the sheriff of Yavapai County to start things off, and how frustrated he is with what's going on.
I can't think of anything low enough to speak of this shooter, of this person decided to take this life. We're hurt. Our agency is hurting. Absolutely unnecessary. And I will tell you this, the violence against law enforcement, we are seeing it escalate everywhere, and it has got to stop. These are community servants. These are people that are out there serving the community, protecting life, liberty, and property, and they do not deserve this.
And as far as that goes, what else is there to say? This man leaves behind a family, 51 years old. And I know I've gone over this before, but here in the city of Phoenix, just in less than a year, Officer Maldivan, gunned down in the line of duty, survived his injuries miraculously. 9 police officers injured on one scene, 4 of them shot, 5 injured by shrapnel and other things, at a scene where a man was trying to execute police officers. 2 police officers ambushed in the city of Phoenix as they were on a slow speed chase following a vehicle. The guy in the vehicle calls his brother in an apartment complex. Then he slowly drives by the apartment complex so his brother can unleash 18 rounds from a 9mm handgun, shooting one police officer in the wrist and then injuring the other with glass. There was the domestic violence case that happened up in North Phoenix where a police officer happened to approach a vehicle that was a suspect of domestic violence. He just shoots her outside of the window under her vest. She survives her injuries, but shot and injured. And then we had a case in South Phoenix where a Phoenix police detective was doing an investigation on a gun crimes case, and suspects tried to execute her in the front of the car. Had it not been for her experience as a police officer, had it not been for her alertness and seeing who these people were and having a suspicious thought, you know, her intuition, her instincts. So she was able, because she was working undercover, she was in plain clothes in an unmarked car. She was able to see these two guys and then saw them reaching for weapons, saw them putting on masks, and she was able to get her vest on, her bulletproof vest on, in time to save her life because some of the rounds that she took were in her bulletproof vest. She was also injured in other parts of her body, but not killed because she was able to get the vest on. And now we've got this. And those are just the tip of the iceberg of what's happened. It is open season on cops. And the lack of accountability makes people crazy. So I want you to hear a suspect description. There's a little bit more detail about what happened. And this is the sheriff yesterday describing that.
We don't have a lot of good information, a lot of facts about what happened at that time, so I won't go into that. The suspect became barricaded in his home, which was right there near the scene, and eventually, in a joint operation with the Yavapai County Sheriff's Office and the Arizona Department of Public Safety, he was apprehended at his home. He's in custody on first-degree murder charges.
Now, let's wait and see how long the criminal record of this suspect is once we learn more. This is what's frustrating for a lot of people. So we know we had the 3-strike law that went into effect in the 90s, and the unintended consequences of that were people that probably shouldn't be locked up in prison forever were. They were locked up for decades. And people said, well, you know, these are nonviolent drug crimes. And so we made a big reversal of so many of these things. But look where we've come to. We've got prosecutors like George Gascon in L.A. You've got prosecutors in San Francisco. Gascon just got criticized the other day. By the way, he used to be the Mesa police chief. Gascon just got criticized by a parent. He made some comments about L.A. streets being safer or some other things. And a murder victim's parent went off on this guy about accountability. I don't know the circumstances, so I'm not trying to speak out of turn, but isn't it interesting to see that we had all of these protesters down at our state capitol the other night? Fortunately, nobody was killed. There were no serious injuries. There was a lot of damage. There was a lot of vandalism. But 9 people in connection with those protests have been arrested. 9 of them. As of yesterday, 8 were let go without charges. And so when there doesn't seem to be an accountability, there was a story yesterday that there were 2 guys, I believe in California, that were arrested for having 150,000 fentanyl pills. They were released on their own recognizance a couple of days later. The lack of accountability, there is a two-way street, which is why I'm glad I'm talking to the interim county attorney today and one of the other candidates. There is a relationship that must be maintained between a prosecutor's office and the law enforcement agents that do the investigations. Now, I know this is not an apples-to-apples analogy, but I want to give you a little insight into how things work sometimes. When you are in construction, you deal with the building department a lot. As for me, as a subcontractor, I dealt with the electrical inspectors. And so you have to develop a rapport with the inspectors. They have to trust you. Meaning this, when they come on a job site to do an inspection and they want to inspect a part of your work. So there's a thing called a walls inspection. It's boring. It doesn't matter. It's before they cover up the walls, before they put the insulation and the drywall up. They want to make sure that what you've done on the interior of the walls, installing conduit, installing boxes and receptacles, everything you're doing inside the walls is done correctly before they allow them to put the drywall on and cover the walls up. And if you make a mistake and you have a good rapport with an inspector, the inspector will say, go ahead, continue working, and they write it on the plans. The next time I come back, I'm going to check your work, but I don't want to slow you down. I want to let you keep working. That's a rapport and a trust relationship. You don't betray that as a contractor. What you do is you dot your I's, you cross your T's, you make the repairs that are necessary, but the project continues. That's the two departments working together. When the trust breaks down, none of that happens. Come on a job site, they see a mistake, fix the mistake, call us back, we'll come out and reinspect. It slows everything down. That's not life-threatening. That's not life-challenging. It doesn't do anything to the safety of our neighborhoods. But it's an indicator of the relationship that has to be there between the two departments working together with the common goal of getting this building built properly and getting it done as quickly as possible. When it comes to punishment of crimes and arrests, police officers have to dot their I's and cross their T's, and they have to make sure that the investigation is done right, that the chain of custody with evidence is done properly, that all of those things are done right so that when a prosecutor gets in a courtroom, the case doesn't fall apart. On the other side of that, the cops have to know that when they go out and arrest people and they do their due diligence and they do their investigations, they have to know that the people that they are working with in the prosecution side is going to as passionately do their job, as attention to detail, aggressive, whatever word you want to use, diligent, that they're going to prosecute these cases and keep people off the streets. Otherwise, you just feel as if you're spinning your wheels. You're out there doing all the legwork, dramatically understaffed. You don't have the investigators to do a lot of work. And the cases that you do make, you want prosecuted. And you feel like, why should I do my job when these cases sit on somebody's desk? But the worst part for the community is, how often do we hear all those cases I read off to you? Moldovan, the injuries in the southwest part of Phoenix, 9 cops injured on one scene, 2 cops ambushed in central Phoenix, domestic violence case that happened up in North Phoenix in a parking lot, and the gun case where the cop was shot, all of them. Every single one of those cases involved suspects that had no business on the streets. They were all convicted felons. Every single one of them. What are we doing? What are we doing? And now, I don't know the details on this guy in Yavapai County, but you can guess. All right, coming up in a moment, former gubernatorial candidate Matt Salmon joins me. We're going to talk to him about why he dropped out of the race and what's next. It's all coming up right around the corner.
Strong values and strong opinions. The Mike Broomhead Show, KTAR News, 92.3 FM, and the KTAR News app.
Hey, thanks for being here. Big announcement yesterday by Matt Salmon, taking a lot of people by surprise, saying he is suspending his campaign for the governor's office here in the state of Arizona. He joins us now. Hey, good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Mike.
So let's first talk about the decision. How long had you been contemplating this decision, and what finally made you decide to drop out of the race?
Really, I'd only been contemplating it for a few days. And as I looked at the most current polling that we had commissioned, I realized that there just mathematically wasn't a path forward for me to be victorious. And the last thing that I want to do is throw the race to somebody I don't believe would be an effective governor. I want to try to affect this in a very, very positive way.
So I know that you were talking yesterday. I know you were on with the guys in the afternoon talking about the path forward and what was next for you. So what is next for you? What's happening next?
Well, what's next is I'm going to work my tail off to get Karen Taylor Robeson elected as governor of Arizona, because I actually believe that, you know, with all the challenges that we have as a state, with the border leaking like a sieve, with the school situation being what it is, with the economy in the tank, and the water situation in Arizona, we can't afford to get it wrong. I mean, these are all incredibly existential issues to us as a state. And I believe that we got to have somebody that actually has a track record of getting things done, and somebody we can trust as a real true conservative like Karen Taylor Robeson. I mean, she's been fighting for the conservative values that I care about so deeply for a long, long time. She didn't just come onto the scene when she decided to run for governor, espousing conservative views. I've known her since she was a very young lady. In fact, I held her dad's state Senate seat after he left. And I've known her parents, her family for a long time. She's a wonderful human being, a great business leader, and somebody that can hit the ground running and lead us in a conservative way. And I've got every confidence that she'll be a great governor.
Now that you are out of the race, let's talk a little bit about how ugly politics can get sometimes. You've been in this game for a long time, two stints in Congress, you ran for governor, you were in the state legislature, and now this run. Is it more contentious now than you've ever seen it?
Well, it is, and, you know, there's a lot of double standards out there. You know, we're supposed to be neutral in the party in the primary. And, you know, I've been the state party chairman as well. And the state party chairman and those around her, you know, or executive director, anything but neutral. They're doing everything they can to try to fix this election their way. And that's really sad. I think that, you know, we've got to have honest brokers that are out there being neutral, especially when they're in sensitive party positions like they're in.
What does, and I'm glad you went down that road, because I was going to ask about this a little bit later, but let's talk about it now. This happening within the party, because you're not the only candidate or former candidate, you're not the only person that's saying that this is happening. What does this do internally? Because we, you know, understanding I'm a Republican like you are, understanding that from a party point of view, whoever becomes the nominee has got to be able to rally everyone within the party right to their cause. What does this do to that effort when it seems as if in the minds of some, the party is leaning to one candidate versus the other?
Well, it's even worse than that, Mike, because they're trying to purge and purify when we've got to be the party of the big tent and welcoming everybody in the Republican Party so that we can win this election in November. There's never been a more important election in this state ever, as long as I've lived, and there's never been more at stake. And instead of being supportive, you know, they kind of eat their own in the Republican primary and form a circular firing squad. And it just doesn't work. You know, we've got to have every tool in our tool belt in the general. And with them being so divisive in the primary, it really creates a problem for the party going forward.
I'm sure you've had conversations. Can you give us a little insight possibly into the conversations you've had when you decided to get out of the race that you've had with the Robeson campaign or with Mrs. Robeson?
You know, I reached out to her over the weekend and was able to meet with her and chat with her about my feelings, my intentions. And, you know, it was only after I made my decision to exit the race that I did reach out to her. But I've known Karen for, like I said, a number of years, and I consider her a friend and a good person. And so it was an easy conversation, and I'm just thrilled to be supporting her. I think she'll be a fantastic governor.
So let's talk about a couple of the issues, because since we've last talked on the air, Roe v. Wade was overturned by the Supreme Court. It comes back to the state of Arizona. How big of an impact do you think abortion stance or right to life stance is going to play in this election? Will this be a huge issue for voters going to the polls in your mind?
Oh, absolutely. You know, this has been one of the biggest divisions in America since the 70s. I came into the Republican Party when I was 18 in 1979, and that was because of the pro-life issue. I didn't know anything else about the Republican Party. I knew that they were pro-life. I've learned a lot more good things about the party since then, but you know, I never actually thought this day would come. I hoped and prayed for it, Mike, but you know, this and the recent decision to allow you know, that football coach to pray on the field. I just think that we've got finally a Supreme Court that gets it right and understands where the Constitution really is and doesn't try to interpret it based on modern day feelings and opinions, but they have an originalist view. And it's so refreshing to see the justices stand up for what's right. And I know it's going to be an issue that we campaign about, but you know, in the preamble to the Declaration of Independence, it says that, you know, we stand for life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And number one is life, Mike. And if we believe it's life, which I do, then we should do everything we can to defend it. That's what the whole inalienable rights are about, protecting life.
Along those lines, we saw January 6th and how disappointed people were and angry people were that would damage our United States Capitol. What was it like for you to watch citizens in Arizona damaging the Senate buildings in the buildings where you served for all those years?
You know, anytime that you see so-called peaceful protests turn into thuggery, it breaks my heart, you know, in Seattle, in Portland, even in Phoenix over the weekend with the pro-choice people defacing our state's property. I think that any time anybody does that, but especially at our nation's capital, they all should be punished to the nth degree. We shouldn't tolerate that kind of thuggery.
When you saw, and I know different from the Senate office building, the Senate building at the Capitol was Wesley Bowling Plaza, where all those memorials were damaged and defaced. Another despicable act that never furthers anyone's cause.
Right. That's what I just said. I mean, any time that people try to enhance their cause by defacing property, assaulting police officers, throwing Molotov cocktails, hurting people, looting, you know, that is not protesting. That is not protected under the First Amendment. You are committing crimes and you should be punished. And I know that, you know, Karen stands for law and order, and she believes, like I do, that those kind of people that do those kinds of things, they should be punished severely.
Well, Matt, I appreciate you coming on and being so candid about why you left and who you're supporting, and I look forward to having you on in the future, just in a different capacity.
Hey, thanks, Mike. And I more than anything, I just want to tell you how much I respect you and your friendship. It means the world to me. Thank you.
Thanks, Matt. Thank you so much. That's Matt Salmon, former gubernatorial candidate, throwing his support behind Karen Taylor Robeson for governor and then listing a number of reasons why. Should make this an interesting race moving toward the primary. Coming up in a moment, Gatos is going to join me, and it's the Big Q poll question of the day. So make sure you stick around for it.
The Gatos Big Q poll question, brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers.
Hey, good morning, Gatos.
Yo, what's happening?
You know, it just keeps piling on, doesn't it?
There's a lot of news out there, man.
There is a lot.
So Matt Salmon has endorsed Karen Taylor Robeson.
Yes.
Just heard that. We talked to him yesterday, and it was just blatantly obvious that, you know, that's who he was going to endorse. I'll read my cue because it's all about that.
All right.
Matt Salmon, he has dropped out. Who does this help the most? So does it help Karen Taylor Robeson or does it help Lake? you know, we talked to a political expert yesterday. Emily Ryan said it'll help Robeson. I think it'll help Robeson. Chad said it'll help Robeson. I know there's like an OH predictive. They're wrong. It's not going to help Kerry Lake. I think if you have independents out there, and I think more independents are going to vote than you think in this primary, they're not going to vote for Kerry Lake. She's too extreme. She's a phony. You know, she's a fire thrower. We'll see that probably tonight in the debate. But it seems to me that, and you've talked to both, it seems to me that, you know, Taylor Robeson is calm, cool, collected. She has, you know, real plans for the state, where the other one is like, well, let me just, you know, make somebody mad in an interview and storm off like a toddler.
You know, and how much, so this is also a question, is how much do these endorsements, how much will they help? Because let's say you're right, and I think, like you do, I think it's going to help Robeson. How much is it going to help? Was it the candidates, the gubernatorial candidates yesterday in primaries went undefeated, the ones that were endorsed by Trump? How big is that Trump endorsement going to be for Kerry Lake in Arizona? Is it going to make that big of a difference?
How'd Trump do in the last election here?
I understand. I'm throwing the information out there. I'm not defending anybody.
I'm just batting it back over the net. But that's you ask a good question, so I'm just hitting it back over
okay.
the net. It's if you're a Republican out there, you know, most didn't vote for Trump. They didn't vote for Biden either. They left it blank because they're tired of the crap. I mean, all the Republicans I talk to is, oh my gosh, are we still talking about 2020? And that's what Lake is talking about. And I'm telling you right now, most Republicans are like, you know, if Lake gets past this one, she could get crushed in the next election by a very subpar candidate, Katie Hobbs. Why? Because independents won't vote for Kerry Lake. She's too extreme. Well, so I think Taylor Robeson is in the driver's seat right now.
Well, I got to tell you, I like the question. Obviously, it's very timely, and I'm interested to see the results in your poll.
I'm going to read it later on today, and if you don't listen, I'll send you a text and tell you how it came out.
All right, thanks, man.
You're not gonna listen.
I listen when I'm driving around.
No, you're not.
I do.
Okay.
All right. Thanks. That's Gatos. Big Q poll question today brought to you by your Valley Toyota dealers. Coming up just after 9 o'clock, Congressman Andy Biggs. We talk about January 6th. We talk about what happened at the Arizona State Capitol. We talk about requests for a pardon. All of that's coming up here in just a couple of moments.